Mr. Chairman, thank you for that introduction. It's the best one I've heard in years. Thank you to CEDA for inviting me back. I always enjoy these functions, especially with the arguments I get afterwards. My focus normally at these sorts of events is to have some time on retrospect, some time on prospect, and some time on a homily. I've decided I'm going to abandon the homily forever because I always thought it meant something like a sermon. But one of my colleagues pointed out that the dictionary defines it as, and I quote, tedious moralising discourse. So you're not getting one. What I intend to do is to simply focus on the election because it's an event which occurs in South Australia once every 4 years. It's an event that can be important to your sector of the community. And it's an event which galvanises South Australians out of their torpor and their apathy, at least for a few minutes. So the focus is the election itself. The content of what I want to say is briefly on arithmetic. It's not Polyscience 101, but if you don't like numbers, have a small nap. I make no apology for them. I want to then make a comment about the nature and the style of the election in the campaign that we've seen so far. Discuss the polls, what are they saying? Come to a very cautious prediction about the result, which I, if I'm wrong, I will deny ever having been here. And then talk about the implications. And let me start with the implications. Why not deal with that first? Normally, elections matter a lot. Normally, you should be fascinated by elections and very much interested in them. Because a change in government can mean a change in the context in which you work. Different policies, substantially different policies, outlooks, programs, can change the context of your business behaviour and your business sort of environment. So elections can do that. So I think it's important that you need to consider what are the implications if one party wins or the other party wins. Now, the problem I think we've got in South Australia, and I think this probably involves the whole of Australia as well, is that that really doesn't occur anymore. What we have these days are two major parties, both of which will be, one of the two will be the only ones to form a government anyway, but they're increasingly looking like synchronised swimming. You have two parties whose policies are very similar. Now, already in this campaign, it's been running officially for only about 3 days, but unofficially for something like 6 months. Already we've seen a couple of minor differences between the two major parties. The Liberal Party has promised to cut the public service significantly, even cut the numbers in the ministry. The Labor Party has condemned that. We have, on the other... we also have a statement from the Labor Party that it's going to increase the police force in South Australia by 400. Did you notice that within 24 hours, the Liberal Party was on the hustings saying, we're going to match that? Now, that is really the way that the two major parties are moving. It's Tweedledum and Tweedledee. So in one sense, the election is, to some degree, irrelevant because whichever party wins, I would suggest the policies are going to be relatively similar. Certainly on issues like the economy, like education, like hospitals and health, you will find very similar policies emerging from the two parties. So to that extent, we can save a considerable amount of time if I say, well, that's it, doesn't really matter to you, let's go on to the next speaker. But I won't. Now, in terms of the arithmetic, I'm going to use a couple of slides up there, and my compliments to the... whoever organised the slides for the previous speaker, they were beautifully done. Unfortunately, although I come from the best university in South Australia, which is excellent in technology, I'm riddled with Ludditism. So my thanks to Jane Silver for organising the PowerPoint slides that I'm going to use. Let's start then with context. That's the result of the last election and what happened subsequently. A couple of points about it. Firstly, you'll notice that in terms of first preference votes, neither Labor nor Liberal can clap themselves on the back. If you get only 36% of the first preference votes, that's not a landslide. Equally, Liberal, 40%. That means Just over a quarter of the whole South Australian public at the last election said no thank you to both Labor and Liberal. That's not a vote of confidence. Secondly, in two-party preferred votes, you'll notice the Liberal Party beat the Labor Party, but it didn't form a government. Now, you all know the reason why, because of the machinations that went on concerning independence and Peter Lewis, etc. But it does raise the issue of a unique law which is current in South Australia, a law called the Fairness Clause, which is supposed to guarantee that in any election result, the party that wins the absolute majority of votes, the Liberal Party, should be able to form a government. If you have time, one day I'll spend a period with you to explain just how this most stupid law, unique to South Australia, ever came into practice. The Fairness Clause is a ridiculous concept and it is utterly stupid. But having said that, I'll explain it later. It takes an hour. In terms of seats, the Labor Party won 23, the Liberal Party 20. One click. I've never known what that stands for. That's Peter Lewis. One National, Carlene Maywald, and there were two independents, Bob Such and Rory McEwen. Since then, the Labor Party lost one seat when Chris Hannah decided to resign from the Labor Party and become a Green. Since then, he's decided to resign from the Green Party and become an independent. It's called the rotisserie method of representation. So that's the state of play at the dissolution of Parliament. Moving to the next bit of arithmetic, where is the election actually going to happen? Now, I put in there three categories: safe seats, comfortable seats, and marginal seats. Safe seats are the ones where a political party can nominate a gorilla and it will win. And I once said that and somebody in the audience called out, "Will they have?" Comfortable seats are the ones with a margin between about 5 and 9.9%. They used to be called comfortable, but these days they're not. They're able to move. The Australian voter and the South Australian voter is increasingly volatile, increasingly willing to change votes from one party to another or to minor parties and independents. But comfortable is they're likely to stay where they are. The marginal seats are the crucial ones. Elections are won and lost in marginal seats. Now, that's a tautology, but it's true. Now, where are these marginal seats? The marginal seats essentially are in the city. So country people are not going to play a major role in this election. There are only two potentially marginal seats outside the city of Adelaide. One of them is the northeast corner of the state, Stewart, and the other one includes Whyalla, and that's Giles. One's held by Liberal, one held by Labor. But apart from that, you can see from that table the marginal seats are in the city, and that's where the election contest's going to be. It's also important to emphasise that we're now in an unusual situation because of the existence in Parliament of a number of independents. And those independents, all but one, occupy what were safe Liberal seats. Mount Gambier, Rory McEwen, was safe Liberal. Chafee, Carlene Maywald, was safe Liberal. Peter Lewis in Hammond was safe Liberal. Bob Such, the independent member for Fisher, that was not safe but comfortable Liberal. So the Liberal Party is clearly interested in winning them back. But Adelaide is the key to where it's all going to happen. Very brief comment about the Legislative Council. And this is the one that could well interest a number of you. Our Legislative Council is elected with a system based on proportional representation and a single statewide electorate. A result of that has been that it is a hung parliament. In fact, South Australia has both houses are currently hung parliaments, if you like. But the Legislative Council is therefore, now let me rephrase this, you can have two interpretations of the Legislative Council. Interpretation one says, look, here is a chamber where neither Labor, that is the government, nor the Liberal Party, that is the opposition, has a majority. It is therefore a hindrance to good government, a place which called chaos, a place which does nothing else but put blockages up in front of government legislation. It should be abolished. It is a blight on the democratic nature of South Australian politics. It doesn't allow anything to be done. That's one interpretation. The second interpretation is that The Legislative Council is the only one of the two chambers which is actually representative, because it's based on a system, an election system, where if you get 20% of the votes, you get 20% of the seats. Now, there are two quite different value judgments there, and I'm not going to buy into that argument. What I will do, however, is make some suggestions about what could happen in the Legislative Council in this election. And let me say, I can make a firm, unqualified, guaranteed prediction. The Legislative Council will remain a hung parliament after the election. The reason being, there are three rows of figures there. After the 2002 election, the Legislative Council was made up of 9 Labor, 7 Liberal, 3 Democrat, 1 Family First, 1 No Pokies, Nick Xenophon, and 1 Independent. And the Independent was ex-Labor. Those staying are in the second row, and the third row shows those who are up for election this time. And this is the crucial component, of course. 4 Labor members are up for election, 3 Liberal, 2 Democrats, and Nick Xenophon and the Independent. Can Labor or Liberal hope to win a majority? The figures are shown in the second part of that table. To win a majority, Labor needs to turn those 4 seats into 7. That is, it has to win 7 seats at this election. To do so, it needs a vote of nearly 59%. I'd suggest that's impossible. The Liberal Party needs 8 seats, and that means a vote of about 67.2%, and that's impossible. So there is my firm and unequivocal guarantee. This election is going to produce a hung parliament. In terms of others there, the Democrats, I would suggest to you, and I feel sorry about this because I'm quite happy to have minor parties around. They generate ideas, generate views which are different, but I think the Democrats' party is over. The polls are showing something around 2 to 3% for the Democrat vote, and that, I think, is a plateau, which means they're going to have great difficulty in holding either of those 2 seats. Nick Xenophon, on the other hand, the master of stunts, has a very strong chance of retaining his seat. He has a very strong chance because, as it was in the last election he faced, everybody is likely to produce preferences for Nick Xenophon. Preferences are going to decide upper house seats, and Nick Xenophon will probably be a recipient. In terms of the Independent, Terry Cameron, I think he also has a very tough run. So undoubtedly some of those seats could move back to the major parties, but in nowhere near enough numbers to produce a majority. As well, Family First, I think, will play a much bigger role in this election, especially in the Legislative Council, and there is a disability party which has been formed, which has been very active out there in the community. So my prediction for the upper house is that it's going to be hung again. Now, what implications are there for you in the business sector? Now, most people in the business sector are losing patience with an upper house which is refusing to comply with what a government wants. I mentioned the two value judgment ways of looking at it, so I'll have to leave it to you to decide which is the better one for South Australian democracy. Now, there are some interesting contests going on, and I just want to mention the 4 Liberal seats which are held by independents. And I think there's a message in this, simply because if there are safe seats which have now been won by independents, the message is to the Liberal Party, there is something wrong somewhere. The Liberal Party's concentrated on 3 of these, Mount Gambier, Chafee and Hammond. Now, I think that's understandable, but I think it's also, if it's an almost exclusive concentration on winning those seats back, I think it's a short-sighted mistake, because as I pointed out earlier, the election is going to be won in the metropolitan area. Predictions, I think Chafee, Carlene Mayweld may well retain it. Mount Gambier, I think Rory McEwen is fighting a very difficult battle. If you saw the poll yesterday, you will have noticed that Peter Lewis now has 11% of the primary vote in Hammond, and it's rather difficult to win from there. And Bob Such in Fisher, I think, is a likely return. Labor has been very clever about these, One thing you can give the Labor government, the Round Labor government, is that it has been very clever politically. The first thing it did was create the speakership for Peter Lewis, which brought him into the fold. Then they brought in two independents into the cabinet. Rory McKeown and Carlene Mayward were made ministers within the Labor cabinet. They retained independence because they retained the right under their contract to abstain from any cabinet discussions or even to vote against cabinet decisions. So that's unusual. This is the first time since 1906 that any Labor cabinet has included anyone apart from people elected from the caucus. So it was a very clever move, but an unusual one. Moving on now to potential what could happens. These are polls. Now, let me make a comment about polls. I need to add some caveats. You need to remember there are different sorts of public opinion polls. There's mainstream polls. Now, into that, I would put the Advertiser polls, News poll, Morgan Gallup poll, Sawick polls, and so on. These are polls which try to do their work scientifically, try to do it properly, and try to report accurately. Their reputation is very sound. The Advertiser and the News poll are always very close to the mark in their predictions and their findings. So mainstream polls, I think you can trust. Then there's cowboy polls. Cowboy polls are the ones where you might find a small report in the newspaper that says a poll was taken yesterday and it showed that Labor's going to win 75% of the votes and the Liberal 25. And that's all it tells you. It tells you nothing about the sample, nothing about the questions or anything else. Ignore them. They're cowboy polls. And finally, there's the media polls. The ones where you see on the television screen, for yes, ring this number, for no, ring that number. Ignore them completely. They are utterly unscientific, and they can be rigged too easily. So easy to ring up 25 times. So ignore them. So what are the news, what are the focus? The focus then should be on the mainstream polls. A second caveat, remember that polls are a time slice. They are a description of public opinion at a specific date. They're not a prediction. They are used too often as a prediction, but they're not a prediction. They're a time slice. The important thing is rather than the result of a specific poll is what is those lovely graphs we've just seen, what is the trend line? And the trend line is the crucial one. The third point about, third caveat, is that there are always margins of error in sample polls. The margin of error is usually between 2 and 3%. So consider that when you're looking at polls. Finally, in political polls, there's always the undecideds. What do you do about the undecideds? They're another complication. Given that, then what are the polls showing? Firstly, statewide, the trend line is clearly towards the Labor Party. It is consistent and it's strong. And if you look, first of all, I've put up three polls, which are statewide polls. In the December 2005 poll in the Advertiser, this is first preference votes, Labor 41, Liberal 35, a significant lead. In January 2005, a News poll, ALP 56, Liberal 44. And finally, in January 2005, an Advertiser poll, 41 to 30. Now, all three suggest a trend line, and that is Labor leading. Leading significantly, and leading in a way that means it looks as if there's going to be a Labor government. Is that mirrored in the crucial seats? Now, I've taken here some Advertiser polls of five of the crucial marginal seats. Newland is North East Road. The poll shows 43% to Labor, 34% to the Liberal Party. Notice for all of those five, Newland, Bright, Morry, Alton, Norwood and Adelaide, in the last column, you can see the swing which the poll shows from the last election. In every one, there is just a significant swing against the Liberal Party, ranging from minus 11, minus 12, minus 8, minus 8, and so on. Now, they're big swings, and they're swings shown by mainstream pollsters. So it seems to me that it is a case that the Labor Party must be considered as in front at the moment. I'm moving towards a prediction, ladies and gentlemen. Careful. Okay, what about the style of this campaign? It's clear to me that the South Australia's first use of a fixed term date for the poll has caused problems, because we've had a campaign going for 6 months, but no firm announcement until a couple of days ago. Now, why did it take so long for the government to make an announcement that the writs were going to be released? Very simply, because until the release of the writs, the Labor government can use public funds for its advertising. Now, you will have heard, I'm sure, constant complaints that the Labor Party's advertising, which it's purported to be advertising the government, is being called propaganda. Now, I don't know why that surprises anybody. The interesting reaction to me was that when one senior Labor minister was asked the question that, "I remember, sir, when you were in opposition and the Liberal Party was doing the same thing, you were violently opposed to it and called it a travesty of democracy. What about now when you're doing it?" And the answer was, "Oh, well, I was wrong then." Now, the reason I raise that is that I think it is that sort of comment is going to increase the level of cynicism in the Australian voting public. And it worries me. But that's my problem. Okay. Secondly, Mr. Kerin went early, started the campaign early. The impact, however, is not noticeable in the polls that I've seen. Labor, on the other hand, is running one of the most controlled presidential campaigns I have ever seen. It is as if there are only two people in this campaign from the Labor Party. In fact, you could imagine from the publicity that there's only one, that the whole government, the whole party, is just one person, Mike Rann. It's a presidential campaign. But you will also notice that Mike Rann is giving the good news, and if there's any bad news, it's the Treasurer. Very interesting tactic. But there is apparently, I don't know if it's true or not, but it's been reported to me that there's a sort of gag on candidates not to make public comments, because it has to be a poll run by Rann. With good sense, Mike Rann is the most popular Premier in Australia. There is a coattails effect, which the Labor Party hopes to win from, and as a result, Rann will dominate the election. But you don't let novice candidates make public statements, simply because most novice candidates have not been schooled sufficiently in spin, and they might give straight answers. So there's a caution necessary there. My feeling is that given this late stage of this election and the lead which the polls are showing, the Liberal Party has to find issues which will bite, and bite in a hurry. And there is very little evidence that those issues are either available or that the Liberal Party is able to use them in a biting way in sufficient time to convince the public. See, one other problem the Liberal Party has is that it's been pushing a line that the South Australian economy is in a terrible state. And that's natural in any election campaign. But the Labor Party's response, that the economy is in good shape, has been bolstered by Mr. Howard, the Liberal Party Prime Minister, who came to South Australia and praised South Australia's economy for being in a good shape. Now, with friends like that, you don't really need enemies. So there's another issue which has disappeared. Over the next few weeks, I think you're going to see something which I saw when I was very young in an election campaign during Tom Playford's time. At a public meeting in Victoria Square, Tom Playford stood on the podium and went through his program and his policies. Mick O'Halloran, the Labor leader of the opposition, followed him on the podium and started off by saying, "Tom, I think I agree with everything you've said." And that's almost the nature of politics today. That what can the Liberal Party do to try and reverse the trend in the polls? To a cautious prediction. The Liberal Party looks to me like it cannot win from here. So my cautious prediction is that Labor will win the election in the House of Assembly, The only issue is how big is the majority going to be? My feeling is that some of the comments I've heard around the place of a landslide are not on. I think it's going to be closer than that, but I cannot see the Liberal Party getting up. There has been another advertiser poll released since the data I've been showing you, and that shows Labor at 43, Liberal at 32, others at 15, and undecided 10. On a two-party estimation from that, it comes up with Labor 51, Liberal 39, and 10 undecided. Divide the 10 up about in that ratio, and you come up with a figure of Labor 56% of the votes, Liberal 44% of the votes. Now, that's a swing of 7% to the Labor Party, which even these days is a big swing, and it would result, if that swing was uniform, with Labor winning 31 seats and the Liberal Party 16. So the challenge facing the Liberal Party, I think, is great indeed. The point that I would come back to is the question of what are you going to interpret the result of? How are you going to interpret the impact of this election? New governments or old governments always come up with policies which have some impact on the private sector, on business, on industry, on production. My general feeling is that it doesn't matter which party, Rand's party or Kerrin's party, wins, the fundamental policies are going to remain the same. It's only going to be a change in personalities and small emphases. On the other hand, the question of the Legislative Council is one that should occupy your mind. Here you have a House with an absolute veto over all legislation. What should be done about it? Should it be reformed or abolished, or do you simply live with the situation? I would suggest abolition is a delightful aim, but I don't think you're ever going to achieve it. It needs a referendum, and it needs a bill going through Parliament supported by a majority, which will be in favour of a referendum to abolish the Legislative Council. I cannot see a majority of the Legislative Council agreeing to that bill. So that's one issue you can probably put aside. Reform is an issue, but for the present, I think you and the business sector have to live with this situation. So maybe your lobbying focus should be not necessarily towards the government and the opposition, whoever wins this election. Maybe your lobbying focus should be towards the members of the Legislative Council, because it's them who will make decisions about policies which affect you. But I wish you happy watching, and I hope you do get the result that you want. Thank you for listening.